Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for real estate investors looking to protect their assets, save on taxes, and build their wealth with Clint Coons. Clint is an attorney, author, avid real estate investor, and featured instructor at Anderson's tax and asset protection events held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone. Hi, it's Clint Coons here with Anderson Business Advisors, and this is another weekly podcast by Anderson. You know, in this podcast, I wanted to talk about something I think is so relevant to you real estate investors out there that are looking to put deals together, because the market has shifted. And if you've been to any of my events before, you know that I've talked about this, is that when it comes to real estate investing, you want to get educated by people who are in the market doing the deals that are relevant at that time. There's so many people out there that talk about different strategies when it comes to real estate investing. And, you know, as an avid real estate investor myself, I've sat through those presentations before. I'm like, yeah, you know, that might have worked about 7 or 8 years ago, but that's, I'm not seeing that in the market right now. Well, there is a certain individual that I've been following for a while that is really tapped in to the new market, as I like to refer to it right now, this new way of investing. It's not really new. It's been around for a long time. It's just a lot of people are not aware of it. And the beauty of it is that you can actually get into real estate, make purchases without using your own money. I mean, when you talk to someone that you meet and you say, yeah, I bought 7 houses and it didn't cost me anything, you can just watch their eyes light up, or else they look at you like you're a liar. But who cares, right? You're finding success. But in order to do so, you need to go to the experts. And that's why I want to bring on to my show an expert, Chris Prefontaine. He is an avid real estate investor, and he is someone that has been out there through the Smart Real Estate Coach, teaching individuals some very key strategies that I think in this market right now are killer and can help you take your real estate investing to a whole new level. So with that, help me welcome Chris Prefontaine onto the show. Chris, you there?
Hey, buddy. I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Thanks for coming on. I mean, I've got a ton of questions lined up for you because this topic is so relevant and it's really interesting. I mean, you and I talked about this earlier that at Anderson, we have a lot of people now calling in and asking really about everything that you do, what you teach people. So I don't want to give it away. Why don't you, you know, start off and just let us know exactly some of the things that you're seeing in the market and when it comes to real estate investing, how you've seen it shift in the last couple months.
Sure. Interestingly, in the last couple of months, to your point, I just told you right before the show, we've had probably a 3 times the amount of properties that we are taking under contract as our students. And to your point earlier, yeah, it's super important. We're in the trenches, you're in the trenches. And if you're not, you, as much as 2 months ago, you're outdated because things are changing so fast. We went from, let's just say January, February 2020, we went from the sellers being, I'll use the word cocky, but very independently thinking that they can sell on their own or with a realtor to, please help me. Please be my guide. Please like come do this. And so we are seeing an influx of those right across the board. And I'll say one more thing about it, because the banks are making it tough for everyone. And to that, we fill the gap. That's all we're doing right now.
There's a lot to unpack what you just said right there that I was writing down a couple of key terms. You said sellers are saying, come help me. So, I mean, how often do you get a seller that approaches a buyer and ask for the buyer's help, right?
Yeah. You know, what's neat is we have, let's just say hundreds of thousands, if you count the students, calls that had been made in January and February without knowing, unbeknownst to everybody. So now every one of my students are like showing shock, still going, you wouldn't believe it. This person who wasn't even interested in February, they're calling me now. That's happening right across the board.
And then you talked about lending. So lenders, I mean, that's been tough. They've tightened up their credit scores. I think Chase was the first one to come out a couple of weeks ago and said they raising their minimum credit score to 720 now on loans. So is that something that you're seeing as well?
Yeah. And this, you know, this happened in 2013 when everybody told me I was nuts to put properties under agreement then, but now it just got magnified. So when the banks do that, I say we're the only door with an open sign on it, because they just pushed out a whole bunch of great buyers, which put a whole bunch of great sellers at jeopardy.
Yeah. So that then shifts the market. So it goes from a seller's market to a buyer's market. thanks to the lending institution. So they're actually our friends now. They're working for us by putting the sellers into this situation. So what we have then is buyers that are out there like you and I, and we want to get into these deals. And we talked about this before. The sellers have shifted. They want to get out of properties because they're concerned. They think that the properties that their tenants aren't going to pay rent any longer because they've been told they don't have to, or they're out of work. I mean, all the fear and the hysterics that are going on that are created by the media to some extent, just the news in general, because they want to make money, that trickles down. So then you step in and you're showing real estate investors how to get into deals without having to use your own money. How does that happen?
Yeah, and that came from, just to preempt this, that came from my coming out of the last curveball market, which was the 08 crash. So I had, my credit went in the toilet and I had no money. So this whole thing was engineered because of that. And quite frankly, no one can say they knew what was going to happen, but I did engineer it with these storms, I call it, in mind to be recession resistant. I won't say proof, that's crazy, but at least resistant. So we do three different things, but I think to our discussion earlier, the two that are real relevant to this conversation with sellers that are in need, because some aren't, they just want to do deals, is the lease purchase vehicle or the purchasing subject to existing financing. Either one of those helps people that have debt that are worried about that debt.
All right. So there's going to be people listening. And when you say lease purchase or subject to existing financing, they have no idea what you're talking about. Maybe you could explain what each of those terms mean.
Yeah. So let's go lease purchase, because that's for a new person. We have literally, our agreements anyway are built in, and you'll appreciate this, with a $10 deposit, because it's just a lease with a purchase attached to it. Here's how we do it. Let me give an example. Let's give the seller the benefit of the doubt and say that they have a house that's worth $300, and we agree it's worth $300, and they have debt of $250. So they do have some equity, because there's all different scenarios we could use. In that scenario, we say this to the seller. We say, okay, Mr. Seller, we will, upon installing our buyer, because we put rent-to-own people in these homes, upon installing our buyer, we will make the mortgage payments on your behalf. We will take care of all maintenance, repairs, et cetera. You will do nothing. And then on or before the end of the term, we'll talk about that in a second, we will do two things. We'll pay you your $50,000 that we just agreed you had in equity in the property, even though you haven't been able to sell in the open market perhaps, and we'll pay off your loan. Now your loan, the loan of $250 is not $250 anymore at the end, which is one of the three ways we benefit. But for them, all they care about, if they're in that situation that we alluded to earlier, they got debt relief and they know with certainty they've locked in their equity and released any debt and released any responsibilities to the home. So that's the lease purchase. If you want to pick that apart a little bit to dive deeper.
Well, yeah. Now, I mean, people might be sitting back and thinking, why would a seller want to lease their home to you under this scenario? I mean, what's going to motivate someone to just say, yo, yeah, take my house?
Yep. Everyone asks that. And this is good, bad, and otherwise market, right? So usually it's a number of different things, and in no particular order, it's either debt relief, as you and I just said, and they don't have another way to do that, especially now, or it's they're carrying two homes and just want closure before, you know, kind of preempting any potential problems, or they were a big source for us as expired listings. So let's say that like, same scenario was already in the market. They tried three times with a realtor. This happens all the time with us. It's a big source for us. So then they come to us and they say, it didn't sell, but I had this equity. I thought I had this equity in there. We, if long as we're good with the market value and we get a long enough term to allow some principal pay down and some market tweaks, we're good with it. So there's a whole bunch of reasons people do it. The other reason is, let me say the reason it doesn't work, Clint. This is easier. Mm-hmm. The only way it doesn't work in my script to you as a seller is, if I got you your price, can you wait on the equity if you have equity? And the only way it doesn't, if they say, no, I got to buy my next house and my kids and I have to move. You know, that's the only scenario. Every other scenario we can structure a deal.
So I'm hearing, and I think the people listening should be hearing this as well, is that there are sellers out there now that, you know, maybe they lost their job. They're in fear that they may not have stability in the workforce any longer. So they want to get out from underneath that debt load that they have. They have a couple cars because, you know, when things are great, people tend to acquire a lot more debt. Things contract, you get nervous about that. So you become then a lifeline for them because the lenders don't want to work with them. You probably saw that in 2008, 2009, lenders going after people and foreclosing on their properties for missing payments.
Yeah, no question. And just for the audience to know, I don't want to paint the picture that just you and I are just on this one little topic here, but there are before COVID and now plenty, like a third of the properties in the United States, to be more direct, that are debt free. And this isn't the scenario. We're just dissecting this one scenario where, yes, we can help a whole bunch of people. And yes, more than ever, they don't know there's an answer. They really don't. And there's a survey done by the Edelman Group. You may have even seen it, that already out. They're very reputable. And it says more than ever, people need an expert, a guide, they need help. And they just don't know that there's an answer, and you have it once you know this.
Yeah, and I've heard some people before say that when you approach someone in a distress situation, you're stealing their equity from them or you're taking their house. What do you say to that?
Yeah, this came up last night on a large workshop. There was like 150 people on it. And the woman said almost that exact words, "Well, I don't know if I feel good about that." I said, "Look, the way we structure deals, we're not wholesalers. We're not flippers. We're not offering 60, 70 cents on the dollar. You notice in that scenario I gave you, we're giving them, if they have any, we're giving them the equity that they would have got if they sold full price in a good market. They didn't get it. As long as they can go out long enough in a term, we're giving them their price. That's the key with these terms deals. I call them terms deals, but we're giving these guys their price. So there is no, I call it healthier way to structure a deal whereby the seller, us as the investor, or you, once you learn it, and the buyer we're putting in the home. It's a three-way win-win. It couldn't be healthier. And that's in any market. This is not just because of what's going on right now.
Exactly. You know, I heard it one time, someone said, you know, your price, my terms, my price, your terms. And that's fair in a negotiation to come up to someone and offer them that type of scenario. But I also think that for those individuals that hear that and still are reluctant, remember, if that person has lost their job and they can't make those mortgage payments and they don't see a path forward for themselves, what is going to be the ripple effect of having a foreclosure on your credit, right?
Couldn't agree more.
You have to think about it and what you're doing for them. So we got the lease option. Then you talked about this subject too. Now that's, I think, is a really interesting way of buying property. Back in 2000, in 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, I saw a lot of investors, and they're still doing today, making money at it. But a lot of people don't hear about it because when the market's really hot, it's always about flipping. And so people like you fly under the radar screen, picking up all these great deals and building your portfolios. And so maybe you could talk a little bit about how you've done that.
Yep. And I want to just draw attention because it didn't come up yet. I just scribbled this down. When we talk about flippers and wholesalers, and as you know, I have them all on my podcast. A lot of them are my friends. So I'm not stepping on any toes when I say what I'm going to say here. But those niches are one check deals. You get a wholesale, you get a flip, you build a house, it's okay. It might be a good check, but it's one check. And you gotta go do that again. So to me, that feels like a job. When you're talking about these deals, we're talking about creating three different paydays on these deals that are quite lucrative, like now money, over time money, and end of the road money. So we can go back to that later. But the subject to existing financing, this is an interesting segue because we've taken a lot of our lease purchase deals where the seller perhaps wasn't as comfortable giving up the deed, which is why they did the lease purchase, or the investor wasn't as comfortable asking for the deed. So they started as a lease purchase. And then once they get the warm and fuzzies, they have credibility, they see that you're paying the payment every month, and that goes on for 9 months or 12 months, we're converting a lot of those to subject to. And what that means is we buy the property day one or later down the road, as I just alluded, in the existing financing. That's why the word subject to stays in the seller's name. So 50 or 60 properties we carry at any one time, none of them are maintaining because they're all buyers and they're not tenants. All of them are not in our name. They're always in someone else's name for loans. And so when you say subject to, or we say subject to existing financing, we are buying that property instead of new money coming to the table. The settlement statement shows the existing loan staying in place.
Now, I've talked to so many investors, and when you use that term, you tell them, hey, the loan stays in their name. They don't understand how you can sell property without paying off the underlying mortgage. They think, no, you can't do that. Can you speak to that? Because you've been doing it.
So my law firm, and you'd appreciate this, right? As an attorney, we went to, in 2012, the what I called then the junior attorneys, now done all our deals, hundreds. but he wasn't sure how these work. He wasn't sure if the due on sale clause is going to affect him. He wasn't sure if the local banks were going to be upset with him. It's like the best known firm in the area. He went to the senior partner, who happens to be a friend now of mine, and we've done deals together, and asked for his advice. And the senior partner said, look, I've researched this every which way you can. This is a contractual thing. It's not a legal thing. And so is there a due on sale clause on just about every loan you can look up? Sure. Are banks in the business of taking property if you're paying on them? Not to my experience. So maybe you'll be the first one out there listening, but I haven't had a loan called because we pay the bill. And so it's been our experience that A, they can sell it. That has nothing to do with the loan. And B, if you make the payments on in a timely manner, perhaps you shouldn't have any problems. We have not in hundreds and hundreds of deals.
I know, because there's so many attorneys out there that do not understand the due on sale clause. And it's so many people throw that up. Well, I talked to my attorney and he said there's a due on sale clause and this doesn't work and you can't move the property because the bank could enforce this. I often tell people, I said, remember the word that he used, could, all right? Didn't say that they are, didn't say that they will. And as you, to your point, you know, I've been working with real estate investors for over 20 years, and we set up structures that violate the due on sale clause all the time. And the bank doesn't care. As long as you're paying on the mortgage, they are satisfied because they're in the business of loaning money, not owning property. Yep, so that's what's key.
Yep.
So you go to closing then, you take over the property. Now, the property transfers to your name, correct?
Yeah, or the entity or trust, yep.
Yep, all right. So you got this property, and then there's a mortgage on there that you're not responsible for. The seller, that you know, they're responsible for it. Maybe they're going off, they're doing something else right now, and you're going to pay that mortgage for them. So how do you pay that mortgage? Because I know that's going to be a concern. I don't want to take on more debt, but I guess I'm really not. I mean, because it's not my debt, but I've made it, you know, I told someone I would do it for them. So right. How do you get money to do that?
Yep, so okay, two answers to that. When you're brand new, you would make agreements are set up this way. You would make all of your deals, lease purchase, subject to the owner financings that we do, contingent upon you finding your, in our case, tenant buyer. These are buyers now more than ever that need time for qualifying, enhancement for credit, seasoning for loans, whatever it might be. They need time. We're placing them in the property. So until such time we find and vet them, we're not taking over that payment on most of the deals, especially when you're new, you don't want to take that on. Now, further down the road, I'll give you an example here. Is there the possibility, because you have what I alluded to earlier of three paydays every time you do a transaction this way, can you then take some of those profits and get more aggressive with your purchases with people that need your help? Yes. Zach, who you just met, Clint, a little while ago, my son-in-law, who had no experience 5 years ago, now buys hundreds of homes for us, went to a couple called us, but they were getting divorced. They were third month behind on their payment. That's a stressful situation. This is pre-COVID. And had credit cards built up that they had fixed up the house with and didn't know how they were going to pay it. Zach structured a subject to purchase and an installment every 6 months towards the husband, because they were splitting up, credit card debt. Like, that was a big win for the wife, a big win for the husband, even though they had to give up their home, because they were about to lose the house, which, as you know, would affect them two, three, who knows how many years. And now they probably had three dings in their credit, and now we've been paying the mortgage ever since and caught up the arrears. Now, would a new investor do that? It costs us like $4,000. Not a huge deal, but would a new investor do that? No, you'd make it contingent upon finding a buyer. So there's always ways to pivot.
You see, I've listened to a lot of people talk about subject twos. And what really struck a chord with me is that when I heard you speak about that strategy on that back end of finding the buyer ahead of time, you know, the tenant buyer, so mm-hmm. to speak, that you're bringing in. I mean, it's just like a light went off. I thought, wow, I never thought of it that way, because now you bring somebody in that couldn't qualify for that property with a lender because of their credit score, but they have the income to pay it. And so you're putting them into the property and they're going to have a sense of ownership. So they're going to be a much better tenant or, you know, individual in there than just a standard renter.
Yeah, you want to know, let me give you the metrics on this. You're going to love it then. So, and these are round numbers, because I know the deal pretty well. We just got done 3-4 months ago. That house, they owed with the credit card debt about $355. The house was on with a realtor, and they just ran out of runway, frankly, because they needed debt relief. But it's worth all day long without premiums, $425, $430. We put that on the market as we were drafting up the agreements with these people because we knew that we had to move quickly for them. So we weren't going to make it contingent upon. But what happens a lot of the time, even if you don't, if you know the property, well, we put it on. We found a tenant buyer. They put $41,000 down on a rent-to-own property. That's a little under 10%. We're at like 430. And so did we care that we had to pay $4,000 in arrears? No, gladly we did it. And so there's ways to structure these to pull out lots of profit. So do the math on that. The house was, we're taking over 355. We're going to have principal pay down. There's no end date on a subject to. You own it. And we sold it for 430 on a rent to own. And so we got the principal pay down, the monthly spread, and the upfront money. That's kind of a cool business model.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if people don't understand that, they're really missing the secret sauce here and how this all comes together. I used to do something similar with rental properties to try to determine if we were buying a house, whether or not we could get the rent out of the property that we wanted. I would list it on Craigslist, even though I didn't own it. I'd say, I have property for rent. And then I would see how many calls I got from it. If I got two calls, like, nah, it's not going to work for me. So I wouldn't move forward with it. But yeah, there's a lot to this as far as putting these deals together, because what you're getting into, part of what I heard you say is the psychology as well, that you're working with these sellers who are in distress situations. And many times, you know, people get into that type of situation and their judgment becomes clouded. They can't see the benefit, the offer that's right in front of them that's going to help them. So you got to find other ways to find those pressure points to get them to move to say yes. And that's not something that's easily learned. I mean, you just don't know that. So that comes from experience, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, deal structuring is neat. My wife and I were just talking about this last night, coincidentally. People say, well, how long are you going to do this for? I go, well, I mean, until these deals get boring, I'm sticking around because I'm having fun. But after 29 and a half years, I'll tell you, there's always a new thing coming at you. It could be a problem or a win, but these don't get boring.
Yeah. Because it's like a math problem. You know, it's the same way to look. Yeah, asset protection. If it was just the same standard cookie cutter approach for everyone, I would be bored to death. But it's because people are unique in their situations, it keeps things interesting.
I was just going to say that your stuff's very similar. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's key to making any business a success. So you've been doing this now for what, 20 years?
29 years, actually. Thank you for the reminder. And but terms deals, you know, so post 08 crash, it was a nightmare for me for 4 years, February of 08 to February of 12. And then I finally had my legs and said, okay, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to have some new rules around this thing. And that's how we structured the terms deals. So it's been that way since.
Since that time. So you've then developed a system, right, to put all these deals together to know if it should be a lease option or if it should be a subject to. And are there other strategies that you also work with?
Yeah, owner financing, but very niched. Owner financing on free and clear property. And so we've been talking, you and I, about COVID indirectly and directly, but there is still a third of the properties, as I said earlier, that are debt-free in the United States, roughly speaking. And those are great people right now to structure deals with because they want it for estate planning or they want it for tax reasons planning. They will take their money over time. We bought our building a year and a half ago. It was debt-free. The guy was a real estate investor, very intelligent, very savvy, and insisted no balloon until 20 years. Like, it's in the agreement. He wants owner financing. He wants it over time. Those are great deals to make, and those are plentiful right now too.
Wow. And I imagine, you know, if people get displaced and they have to move to a different area of the country for work, there's another opportunity for you to come in and buy that house. Because they're not selling, they're just sitting on the market. You know, I don't know what it's going to be 7 months from now, what the average time on market's going to be for homes. But yeah, there's opportunities there. So you actually teach a course on this?
Yeah, we have an online course. It's in our, we call Smart Real Estate Coach Academy. But what I'll say about it is this, Clinton, and I think you and I talked about this about a month ago. Our course is not like, okay, go take the course and good luck and you know, you get it. Our course is like a resource center. So we're updating it. We painstakingly update this thing whenever we think there's a tweak. For example, what we just went through with COVID, two new videos had to be installed and an agreement had to be changed on one of the forms. So we're constantly changing this. So even people that are doing deals are using it as a resource center, constantly evolving, living, breathing thing. And it does teach, like, it rips apart how to start the business, how to lead gen, how to then work inside of each one of these buckets you and I are talking about, the sub two, the lease purchase. So it's A through Z, literally.
You see, so many people attend courses and they get paperwork and they'll send it to me to review. And I'll look at it. And the first thing sometimes I'll notice, I'll see the font that was used. And I'll call them up and say, you know, I don't think they make that font anymore. So that just tells you how old these documents are. And they're probably out of date. Because, yeah, the person you're working with, they're not staying up on it. Things change. And that's what's so important when it comes to real estate investing, is that you need to always be at the forefront of that. And as what I like about what you're doing is that you're in the business, so you see it, your clients bring the challenges to you, and then you're like, all right, we need to move, we need to make a change here so we can address that so then everyone else can benefit from that. So if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
They can just go to smartrealestatecoach.com, but what you and I will do is we'll work on it after the show. We'll put a link in there to give them some bonuses just for hearing us on the show. All they got to do is put in the little survey that we'll give them that they heard us on the show. We'll give them some bonuses and we'll give them a special price.
That'd be great. And I would encourage anyone that's listening in, if this is an area that you're considering getting into, if you're a real estate investor, of course, because you're listening in, you need to know this stuff. And more importantly, know how it applies to your area and how to put the deals together. Because, I mean, you brought up this COVID thing that I'm just curious. You don't have to tell us if you don't want to, because it's part of your secret sauce there. But what was it that made you want to change?
Change with which piece? I'd love to share.
You said with the COVID that you had to make a change.
Oh, the main thing is this. This is a key strategy. So it's the biggest change that you should be paying attention to now with terms deals is the length of the term. So we were talking like it was just normal process with all our students, and they're all over North America, mostly US. We were talking like, hey, you know, 3-year mark was pretty standard lease purchase. Now, because of the uncertainty of the market on our end, and because the sellers really, frankly, don't have a ton of options, we're talking 5, 7, and 10-year deals now. Well, when I go to sleep at night, if I get a 10-year deal, whether it's lease purchase or owner financing, I'm sleeping a heck of a lot better with any market fluctuations. And I don't want to say I don't care, but I don't care what the market does. I really don't. I'm not too concerned about it as long as I have the right terms. That was the main piece right there.
Wow. So it's evaluating the market and then making the changes to your agreement so they're always up to date. And the thing is that I hope the listeners appreciate the fact is that this is technical. All right. You need to understand how to put these deals together. It's not, you just don't go knock on someone's door and just start, you know, blabbering about, hey, I want to buy your house. There's a system to it that you've developed. That's how you found success. And so I hope that the listeners take advantage of that and grab those bonus items that'll be in the show notes there for them and get educated. So to wrap it up, what do you do to, you know, stay on top of the market? Is there newspapers? You know, what does it look like in the day for you?
You know what? To stay on top of it, I wish I could give you this like secret economical, you know, forecast thing, but our fingers on the pulse because of two things. We're doing deals, myself and my son-in-law Zach and my son Nick, literally every week. And then we call them associates. They're students who have decided to lock arms with us and not just go through a course, but say, hey, like, I want you in my court. I want you on my shoulder. So I want you calling my sellers with me and my buyers, and I want you in my deals. We call them associates, and we've got about 85 of those around the United States right now. And so we hear, like every week, we're hearing on the associate private call what the heck is going on in the market. There's no better gauge. Like, you got 85 people plus us, let's just call it 100 people doing deals. You just listen to the call, you got a grip on the market instantly.
Yeah. And what you just said, I mean, it's not like your accent gives it away where you're located, but you know, that was a key point because some people, I think, well, if I'm not in the Northeast, then this isn't working out for me. No, they're all over the country that these deals are being put together. So I hope they take advantage of it. And with that, is there any last pieces of information you want to leave?
No, just look, don't let this market intimidate you. I don't care what niche you're in. I don't care if you're in the legal field. Don't let this market intimidate you. Clint and I are two people, but there's a whole bunch of other people that are positively working and helping a whole bunch of people in this market. And when you do that, yes, there's profits there. But the fact is, you're affecting generations. Like, you help one family, you just made a generational deal. So that's pretty positive. Go out and do it.
Absolutely. All right, everyone. Thanks for joining in for this week's podcast. Be well, be safe. And remember, this is an opportunity for you. don't let this time pass you by, because it's like everything when it comes to investing. We always tend to look back and say, if I woulda, shoulda, coulda, where I would have been today. This is your opportunity to go out there and start building your real estate dream. So with that, take care, everyone. Thanks to you, Chris, for being on the show, and I wish you the very best.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.